This is a Pinball News production.
Gentleman behind me is Reinhard Badgarten. I know him as Reiny. This is Leslie. He is one of the four partners of Retro Pinball LLC, the other two being Gene Goodman and Mike Patz in York, Pennsylvania. And our game right there is the King of Diamonds. All right, just giving a brief history. They kind of changed my lecture on the fly here. We'll start with the Gottlieb Company. They were established by David Gottlieb in Chicago, Illinois in 1927. And probably most people don't know, they actually were, their goal was to produce bingo games, some arcade games, and maybe one or two pinball machines. And basically nothing really happened much for the company up until 1931 when they came out with Baffle Ball, the pinball machine, which came the most successful pinball game manufactured, and they sold over 50,000 games. If you've ever seen any of the games from that time period, usually what the manufacturers did in those days is have a certain pattern like Baffle Ball, change the colors and just change the name. So pretty much everybody copied everybody else. And if you take a look at some of the Bally Williams, United, and Stoner games, they actually look very familiar to Baffle Ball. Pretty much the 30s, you know, Baffle Ball was pretty much there through most of the 30s until the 40s came along. And then, of course, with the war breaking out, everything was switched over to war conversions. And, you know, there was not any really particular big games of note that came out at that time. And then in the year 1947, Gottlieb introduced a device that changed the future of pinball, which was the flipper. When Humpty Dumpty came out, it basically had six flippers in a reverse pattern that helps the ball move up the up and down the play field. They now had made pinball a skill game. Everyone within 2 weeks of Humpty Dumpty's introductions added flippers to their games or update an old game to flipper play. Gottlieb had a big hit in their hands, and then at that point they introduced the Fairy Tale series that consisted of some games like Cinderella, Lady Robin Hood, Old King Cole, and others. Now, people don't realize there's a lot of things that Gottlieb had done through the years that invented stuff that are used today in pinball machines. In 1951, Gottlieb invented the slingshot kicker. In 1954, Super Jumbo became the first four-player game. In 1957, wood rails were replaced with metal ones. 1959, the first number match appeared on the back glass of a game. In 1960, flipper became the first add-a-ball game, where it would reward extra balls instead of replays. They were mainly used most on the East Coast, as replay was still illegal in those days. In 1965, the first game to have return lanes was created. And in 1966, the first game to have automatic ball lift came into being. Also in 1971, Challenger was made, which became the first head-to-head style pinball game. And in 1971, Gottlieb invented the first inline drop target game. And in 1982, Caveman became the first pinball combination and video game, pretty much what Pinball 2000 did. Now, just to let you know some of the other things Gottlieb invented for the good or the bad, they invented gobble holes, my favorite, turret shooter, a Heath shoot coin acceptor, which electronically actually reset the banks on startup of the pinball machine. They also invented trap holes, double award games, roto targets, metal front and back doors, score to beat on the back glass, metal rails on a pinball, rules set for add a ball or replay to get specials, which helped us a lot with our new game. Shoot again feature, a multi-ball player games. They also were the first ones to take these aggravating metal pieces off the side of lockdown bars to make one lockdown bar. They also invented the Very Target and Bonus Countdown. So pretty much the 50s and 60s did very well for Gottlieb. In the 70s, because of Bally, they weren't as popular. So when they had to do the conversion to electronics, they took a lot longer than most other people did. Back in 1976, towards the middle of 1977, they worked out a deal that Gottlieb was sold to Columbia Pictures to hopefully boost their sales. And besides Haunted House, not many pinballs were remembered for much of the 1980s. Gottlieb also changed hands a few times in the 1980s. Coca-Cola acquired Gottlieb through Columbia in 1983. MyStar Electronics got custody of the company in October of 1984, and then Gil Pollack got back the company and changed it to Premier Technology, where it lasted till 1989, where the name went back to Gottlieb in all the games. And then after many not-so-popular games, Gottlieb ceased operation in the summer of 96. Bob Wire was the last production game, and they had Brooks and Dunn in production at the time. And all you really see of that game now is just the back glass and play field. So now what we'll do is we'll move ahead to 1999, where a few of our friends, we went out for lunch during the expo, which was myself, Riney, Pete Cooley, John Norris, and we were all talking about games. And the question sort of came out, what game do I think is the bestseller for us at Fabulous Fantasies? And that's when I said King of Diamonds. And I've always said, because of how long it takes to restore one, wouldn't it be a great idea to actually make a brand new King of Diamonds using a newer technology? So we all thought that would be a great idea. And then, you know, we kind of let it go from that. And about a year or two later, Pete Riney and I got together for a lunch, and we came talking about the our idea for a King of Diamonds pinball machine, and we decided at that point that why not give it a try, and we'd go from there. And I was a very good friend of Joe Kamikal at Sega or Stern at that point, and I was going to Chicago anyway, so I thought I would talk to him regarding possibly doing a game. So when we went there, Joe loved the idea and said, well, bring us a prototype, and we'll go from there. So basically, I purchased the body, boards, basically all the parts to make a King of Diamonds, but using all Stern technology. And we basically took a few years, and then I unfortunately went to Riney and said, I'm doing a show in Las Vegas in 2006, and it would really be nice to have the King of Diamonds there at the show. So poor Riney probably worked all day and night, and his wife probably still doesn't talk to me since then. And we got the game all finished, and we showed it at the show in Las Vegas in 2006. Everybody loved the game. They got a kick out of it, although it was pretty funny because most people, I had my original King of Diamonds next to them and said, wow, they really did a nice restoration on that game, but why did they use such an ugly cabinet to do it with? So then we decided we'd go to Chicago with it, and I was talking to two friends of mine who I buy a lot of games to at M&P Amusement, Gene Goodman and Mike Patz, and they've always came up with the idea, since they sell so many redemption games, wouldn't it be cool to have a new pinball machine to go with all of it? So we met, they saw the game, they played it in Chicago, and basically fell in love with the game, and Retro Pinball was formed right there. After we got back, I got a nice little call from Gary from Stern, and at the time they decided this would be way too much competition for them and that they were impressed, but they wouldn't be interested. So the four of us got together and decided, well, it's really a Gottlieb game anyway, so why not make the game completely Gottlieb? And so we basically spent the next year and a half putting the game to Gottlieb. And basically what you see now is the game that we've still made changes every time the game goes to any one of the shows. We always find something else to do with it. And I'm sure one thing you guys would like to hear is how the game operates in our system. So, Ryan, if you want to take it here, explain to everybody basically how the game works.
Well, as you can see, it still is in the format of a traditional wedge head, even though it's got the deeper cabinet. And one of the things that we discussed with Herb was he was also figuring that there was a good market for the product for the operator as well as the home sales. And I pretty much insisted that the operator wouldn't buy a single player game. So we came up with the idea of incorporating the multiple players while still using the single set of score reels, since it wouldn't be cost effective to put another 16 score reels on the game. And we were trying to stick with the original artwork that had already been made for restorations, including the play field and the back glass. So then utilizing the Stern cabinet, which is deeper, we added the diorama at the bottom where you can indicate the player up and the ball in play and the number of players that are currently playing. And the game, using the computer technology, recalls the scores and as you switch from player to player. And that way, many people know that most games only get played in a single-player mode, and about 80% of all games get played as a single-player game. And then two players, you add a few more percent, and three and then four make up the rest of the 100%. So almost all games get played as single player anyways, so we get the best of both worlds by operating it as the look of a single player. It's cost effective that way, but still offering the multiplayer for competition and for families in the home to play as a unit. So again, while maintaining the idea of the score reels, because originally Herb thought that we would be looking at doing it with LEDs and with 7-segment displays, and we all agreed that that just wouldn't fly to the home collector. So we actually worked on and came up with the idea of utilizing the same score drum as you would on an electromechanical, but instead of it being stepper motor driven, instead of it being stepper unit driven with a solenoid activated action with all the ratcheting.
You also have to be 6 feet tall to get the key in.
And that was one of the factors involved, that Herb insisted on it being a wedge head. And when you have the wedge head aspect, it doesn't provide the ability to easily have a hinge out front like you would on a normal game. So I had to come up with a slightly different presentation to keep the look but still have full accessibility for the operator and the user. And so it allows you to access it. And instead of the bottom being filled with motors and stepper units and relays, it's now being run by a normal computer unit. And instead of it being multiple boards, as you may be familiar with other games that are made up of a power supply and a computer board and a driver board and maybe another driver board, everything was incorporated onto one single board. So with the operator and the home user, if there's an issue that we feel is an electronic issue, by sending out a complete board, they basically replace everything in the machine. So it's evolved over the years. It started out as multiple boards that were located on the play field and in the cabinet and in the head in order to reduce wire distance. But in the end, it was suggested and insisted upon that we'd be better off using a single board. So the score reels are being driven by stepper motors, as you would be familiar with in the slot machine industry. Just like the slot machine industry used to be mechanically activated and then later electromechanically activated, now all those reels, they use a stepper motor which has a magnetic field that can advance in small detents, and then use optical interruption to cue it to determine every time you come around to a full revolution and re-index yourself. So the computer knows at all times exactly where the reel is because it's in charge of advancing it through little minor steps of the motor detents. And then the optic allows it to recalibrate every time it comes around so it can keep track of it. And unlike the original game that actually received an award for incorporating the card animation into utilizing the trip bank that was also used as the memory while the player was playing and kept track of whether you'd gotten the 2 or the 3 or the 4 and all the stacks of switches that turned lights on and turned lights off and completed sequences to light the special. In order to still maintain the animation that we wanted to look to and feel of there, we had to recreate a new card animation unit that's utilizing industrial solenoids, which are, again, under computer control. They're pulled in and then they're pulse width modulated so that a very small amount of power is used to actually hold them up. So, again, incorporating all the aspects that are necessary in running any pinball game, we've got the power supplies. This unit actually has dual processors. There's a master processor that's basically in control of most of the functions of the games, rule set, the light control, the switch matrix control, and then we have a slave processor whose duties are to control the score reels, the auxiliary solenoids, which are the card unit, or in other games could be flash lamps and other things like that. And also, it then speaks to the sound system. And in order to incorporate the sound and the feel of the original game, there is an actual bell chime unit inside the game. So we didn't revert to the traditional bell assemblies where you would have the large bell and the gong and such. By us looking at the manufacturability of the product, just like the companies evolve from game to game, and the fact that we intend to make other products in the future, we have to figure look to the future and decide what can we do now that we can utilize in the future. So, well, the traditional game would have the bells and the gongs. This game has the bell chimes, which still gives you the look and feel of an electromechanical game and gets you that sound that you expect and the resonance that you expect as the chimes taper off. So we do have the bell chimes, but at the same time, when you have a fully electronic game, there's really nothing else going on as you play the game other than the bells. And since now all the step units are gone and all the bank resets are gone, we utilize electronic sounds to give an extra simulation of the sound of a game that's still a step for units and resetting target banks and simulate that stuff. So you just don't have that dead air of having a game just sitting there doing something and you don't hear anything happening. So we do have a sound system. It's not, you know, up to par with the late model Williams games before they went out of business, but we do have the ability to evolve as our products evolve.
And, you want to show them the adjustment?
And in order to provide, again, the features that the operator or the current homeowner is used to, the aspect of only having lamps and score digits representing numbers doesn't give you the opportunity to have too much feedback to the owner. So we added a small LCD display on the board that allows us to provide text information. And then at the same time, the software then provides all of the kind of features that operators and homeowners that like to tinker with their game have come to expect. We have full auditing of the features such as coins and number of left drains and right drains and how many times replays have been beat and such. And in addition to audits, and in order to, if the operator is familiar with the system, he can put the game into test from the front and he can use the flippers to step through option settings and then the game recalls those features on the score reels, at least for the lower four digits of a six-digit memorized number. And all of that is held in battery backup RAM so that that's available and it can be zeroed out, you know, when the operator wants to zero his features. After the audits, you can go into adjustments and it provides the ability to adjust score replay levels, features, setting it up for replay, add a ball. The game has the capabilities of an add-on ticket dispenser for the redemption market to allow more than any other game has ever done in the form of pinball. We separately have just about every major feature of the game independently adjustable as far as 0 to 99 tickets for payout. So you can award a ticket for doing a small group of numbers, the full group of numbers, award a bigger amount of tickets for specials and replays, extra balls, high score to date, and all of those kind of things. And of course, even though it's an electromechanical, it does have what no other electromechanical has ever had. It does memorize the high score to date. So it does, in memory, record the high score to date. And if you just like its electronic counterparts, the operator can set one, two, or three replays for the award for beating high score to date. Again, there's adjustability of all sorts of features, and then it goes on to have the traditional solenoid and lamp tests and switch matrix tests that you might need as you work on the game. So first test, of course, is just all lamp tests. So if the lamp's not lit or flashing, chances are you have a problem. To further isolate that problem, it has individual lamp tests, which you may have trouble seeing, but we're stepping through each individual lamp. And in addition to knowing which lamp we have on, the display is showing us which lamp we're addressing, last ball, and in this case, strobe 1 and return 6. So there's an identity for the technician to help isolate where his problem might be. After lamp tests, you can go through to have further technician-related tests of lamp strobe tests where we're activating everything on one strobe or everything on one return. So you can, again, once isolate problems that you're trying to figure out at the playfield level. After that, you've got solenoid tests where you can, again, advance through the test, again, showing in text on the back the center bumper right now is being selected. It's telling you that Q4 is the driver over here that drives that solenoid, and then you can activate it, you know, to verify that it's actually responding. After those are the primary solenoids that are controlled by the master computer, up to 16 drivers for that, four of which are universally dedicated for flipper use, higher current drives. After the primary solenoids, you go into the auxiliary solenoids, which in this game with the animation, are the card unit, and so we can step through and activate and test the card the auxiliary solenoids, which in future games could be flash lamp control, and so it would be able to diagnose that. And then we do have the primitive sounds in this current game. We can step through the sounds and activate them and see whether everything's working the way it should. Some actually implemented in the current version of software. And then after sound test...
That's your tilt, by the way.
We do have the traditional switch matrix tests where we can identify when a game and a switch is actually closed. And we can also use the same test to test switches to see when they activate. And once again, the switches are then displayed not only audibly, but also in the back on the display so that it can be diagnosed what switches. And if there's more than one switch in place, it'll scroll through all the different switches at a one-second interval and identify the switch strobe and the switch return so that you can identify that. Following that, since, as I said, these are stepper motors, there is a step motor drive test where we can individually drive up the four solenoids that are used to activate each reel and verify that there's a smooth motion from detent to detent in the drive circuitry, which also translates in back on the display where we've got ones and zeros that indicate the status of an optic that as it makes and breaks the control here, the technician can see that the computer is actually seeing feedback from that, since that feedback is used to identify where the score reel is. And then we're back, we loop back around again to the audits and identify each item as you step through it. So, briefly, are there any questions on anything that I quickly blew through there for you? In general, all the mechanics about a pinball game were utilizing traditional parts. So in this game, it's a traditional plumb bob tilt, just like you would expect. In order to reduce costs and the fact that it's typically not utilized any longer, there's no ball roll tilt. There's a slam switch on the coin door, but there's not a slam switch on the cabinet, such as if you picked it up and dropped it, or on the back cabinet. Since we're not dealing with mechanical activation, where those games, the abuse that people were doing were in an attempt to get relay and contacts to close when they weren't supposed to close. So to pick a game up and drop it to see if it activated the start relay and gave them a free game, with the computer technology, that doesn't exist, so we don't really need to add that extra cost to the game in doing that. Any other questions?
So the weight of the bottom part is less because you put everything in the back?
Because of the deeper cabinet and the construction, it actually weighs probably more than a wedge head, but since it doesn't have the elaborate play field, it probably weighs a little, somewhat less than its contemporary counterpart. But in order to get the feel of a traditional game, we didn't scale back on the cabinetry and produce it in a thinner or a lighter type of wood, because part of playing a pinball game, there's a mass that you're used to dealing with, and to have a lighter product would just make it feel like a toy. So it still has that true cabinetry, quality plywood construction. Yes, Gary.
Have you got traditional knockers?
Only you would ask that question.
Well, unfortunately, the game's only equipped with one knocker. But yes, it uses...
It's going to be more than one game.
Yes, and again, the game is built with Gottlieb Parts. We have an agreement with Gottlieb Development, LLC, and through his parts manufacturer, the Pinball Resource, we have full ability to gain access to all of the Gottlieb archives, all the engineering, and all the manufacturing tooling. So if the Pinball Resource doesn't already make the product, we have the ability to go back to the Gottlieb engineering technology and get the specifications and get those parts manufactured to suit our needs. But fortunately, most of the products that are in this machine are already built and stocked by the Pinball Resource, and all the critical metal and plastic assemblies are actually, the product is coming from, in most cases, the original American vendors that made the products over the last 30 or 40 years. So we know that regardless of where the machine gets assembled, the quality is already there in all the pieces that would make or break a pinball machine as far as longevity and reliability and maintaining the same feel of play throughout the life of the game. Yes.
Star wheels, is that an off-the-shelf product?
It's not an off-the-shelf product. The stepper motor is an off-the-shelf product, but the real drum is a custom casting of our own. The PC board with the optic is my own creation, and the aluminum bracket that it's mounted to is also original. So that is
not an off-the-shelf product.
Well, it depends whose shelf you're speaking of. You could go out and buy it from any pinball supplier today, but it will be a retro pinball part, and it will be available as a stocked item for replaceability and serviceability and warranty replacement. As we gear up, if there's the homebrewers out there that would love nothing better than to buy the product in small pieces, we'd be more than happy to sell those parts to those people that want to deal with it.
How did you generate the whinnying horse sound?
I purchased the sound file archive to be able to freely use samplings that were available.
Pretty beautiful.
Yes, in that.
What did you do to simulate affecting gameplay in terms of what timing issues? If you hit a 500 or 5,000 point target, in the end, you got to wait for it to cycle the motor to run through, and you can't score while you're doing that. And if you're eventually making a game of drop targets, you hit two drop targets, you get one scoring.
Right.
So would you now have...
And in reality, I did consider that, and I maintained that aspect when I programmed the game. My background in games is as a technician, and I've been working on these games for 30 years, so I understand all of that. And the beauty of the programming, when you sit down to program microcontrollers, is at least in my case, I think in binary logic, and relays and stepper motors were basically binary logic. So the same technology that existed mechanically exists in my software routines, to where I do have timing routines and score motor simulations, to where an event gets triggered and I independently fire it in a time frame, and during that time I mask the ability of another score feature to override it or be in addition to it, which can be argued both ways, because as the solid state games evolved, like games like Mata Hari and Evel Knievel, that's what made them so great against their electromechanical counterparts, is if you did hit a sweep of three drop targets, the computer remembered three switch closures, logged them, and then recorded, instead of 500 points that would have normally occurred in that mode score motor cycle, it would award 1,500 points to the player, which is why you suddenly saw much higher scores just as the games evolved, through the end of the 90s, to where you were getting up into the billions. It was always great for the player to, the previous game had a lesser score than the next game. Everything was add another zero. And that whenever they can do that without increasing cost, they did it. So in these days, they had to increase cost by adding additional score reels. In the digital era, they added another digit, and then another digit, and then they got the dot matrix display, and they could play around with the font and increase scoring that way.
Do all games have coin doors? Is that an option home buyers can forego?
Well, in our manufacturing model, yes, all games will have coin doors. You have to have access to gain access to the machine. And the cost difference, there is a cost difference, obviously, for us buying a blank door or buying a coin-equipped door. And once again, when you're looking at the manufacturing end of things, quantity drives your price. And to stock two different items or provide various options just increases cost and makes it that much more difficult for us to release a cost-effective product. While we're using a HAP Controls coin door right now, it allows the operator, should they choose, to go out and purchase a dollar bill ready coin door. And the game is already pre-wired for a bill acceptor to be installed on it. But that would be overkill, because we're talking about twice the price, to provide that coin door on every machine, as like Stern Pinball would do today, since they're selling basically to the commercial market and trying to drive that dollar bill acceptor market to get a dollar per play, or at least gobble up a dollar right away and not do it in the form of four coins. But by utilizing HAP's product, it provides the ability for the operator to go and purchase that door directly from HAP and then choose the bill acceptor of their choice, which then drives the price up $300 or $400 more, which would be ridiculous to put that product if we don't know numbers yet, but if 60% to 80% of our product went to the home, it would be ridiculous to pass that cost on to the home. But at the same time, we aren't getting enough of a benefit to back the coin mechs and the coin slots out of that door and put just the bare skin on it. And since we have to have accessibility to get to the lock bar and to get to the various components inside the game, it's the trade-off that we settle on to actually have a coin door. And while it was discussed, most collectors, even when they get a game where the coin mechs have been ripped out and there's hardware missing, they quickly gather up the necessary parts to make the game back to the way it was manufactured. So even if we didn't put coin slots on it, there'd be people out there that would want to add that option. Yes, over here.
So while obviously needed, was there much controversy in adding the thousands reel? The original game doesn't have a reel.
There's a great ability when you're the only person pretty much making most of the decisions. For me, it was a no-brainer. That we knew that as you develop the game and it becomes stronger and cleaner and perhaps more reliable at scoring and all of that, that to be left with only one light up one was pretty short-minded to do so. And once, just like in the case of the credit reel, the same technology is utilized on the credit reel to represent the credit number. So to add another reel does add cost to the game, but we think it's a beneficial addition to give that ability, that expansion of the thing. And I'm sure you'll start to see from us five-digit and even six-digit games, just because we might need it to represent the proper play of the game.
And as I remember, with its counterpart, which is Diamond Jack, it is an animal, and that's an animal as well, which then does have all four score reels.
Which the game is programmable as both a replay version as well as an add-a-ball version, and once again trying to make one product that fits multiple markets. So that's Pete Cooley, who did a lot of our playfield and our cabinet artwork for us, and we greatly appreciate his contributions. We did that with the score reel. It was just, to me, it was obvious because, well, maybe they considered that, well, how often does somebody actually get 1,900 points when playing the game? Do we really care? Well, going to the home market, there's people that are going to sit there and play the game day in and day out and become very proficient, and they'd be very upset if the most the game could indicate would be 1,999 points. Okay. Yes?
If this is successful, are you planning on just doing repos of existing games, or down the line do you think you'll like?
No, actually, I'll answer that. We have an agreement for Gottlieb to do Gottlieb games, but because we are retro pinball, we can do pretty much any game we want. And Ryan and I already have been fighting over what would be our certain themes, and we've been approached by quite a few people to make other themes too. So I think you'll probably see maybe one Gottlieb game a year and one custom game a year, but we're always going to use this as our footprint. So that way we can very simply, when we're developing a game, use a insert for the playfield in the back and get it into prototype stage real quick and then come out with the game. But we have the freedom, that's the way we built the game, to pretty much do anything.
But more than likely, any future product will be built using Gottlieb parts, since we have the relationship with the supplier, and we get the benefit of the fact that that technology is in existence with over 30 years worth of engineering and development, and we don't have to start from scratch and know that we're starting with a quality product and we're just playing. It's kind of, for me, it's a Tinker Toy set. I get to play around with the parts and do whatever I want to do and see how it comes out. Yes, over here.
Yeah, besides the, I'm curious, besides the whip crack at the end of the game and the horse or the tilt you mentioned, are there a lot of other event-related sound effects, and is there any significance behind the one you chose?
Well, currently there's not a lot of... I have expandability in the sound system to where we can do speech. We can't do too much in the way of music, because the current design is limited in the number of events that can be done and what it takes to start and stop the sound event. So most of them are event triggered. It's still an ongoing programming process for me where I'm continually adding things to it. And so, as I said, there might be sounds that are implemented in there that aren't implemented in there. But overall, it was just, to me, it's a Western card theme, and to me, it wouldn't make sense to have a laser blast sound in a Western card theme. So I have to focus on, well, what might you hear, you know, when you're talking about, you know, an old saloon, Western saloon, what kind of sounds might you hear, clinking of glasses. Exactly. Yeah. So it's, again, it falls back on my creativity or lack thereof.
And, you know, don't forget, we still want to keep it as an idea of it's a repro from 1966 also. So that has a... and I'll tell you one thing. What I did want him to add on the beginning, and he refused to do it.
I didn't refuse. I was limited on time.
Okay. Well, either way, as you know, Ronnie did Cactus Jack. Wouldn't it have been cool for when somebody goes up and goes, "You're up, Tenderfoot." I thought that would have been a great idea, but no, he didn't want to do it.
We have a number of speech calls that we would love to implement, but haven't had the time yet to do it. So, again, we're trying to bring the product to market as quickly as possible, and there's always things we can do with second releases of the machine and on future products as we go and do more development. Yes, over here.
I'm just wondering, what other Gottlieb games are you thinking of in the pipeline?
Well, actually, this is one of the things that the partners continually discuss and even argue about. We prefer, well, number of ideas have been thrown around publicly. We prefer not to comment on future product the lines that we might be pursuing, because we don't want to get somebody's hope up and think that something's coming next. Mm-hmm. And then when we finally get down to it, we've done something completely different because three out of four people have decided to go in a different direction. So, well, there's a lot of creative games out there that we can work with, and there's game. Everybody's got their favorite. I've got a lot of favorites that I would love to do. Herb hates them. Herb has games he loves. I hate them. The other partners may have their favorite and hate them all, and all they care about is whether or not the game's going to sell. I mean, we all love pinball, but we're all in this to actually maybe, you know, turn a profit with it.
I just have to say, I think it's a fantastic idea. I know nothing about cars, and I don't want to. I would love to have a late 1940s, big, fat, beautiful, whatever. But, you know, I can't buy one of those things because I can't tinker with it. And in some ways, this feels the same way. Like, I'd love someone to make a car that is it's got brand new everything, but it's got an old skin all over it.
I think mm-hmm. Ford did that with the Mustang in a way. You know, they go back to things that work for them and try to make them contemporary, but at the same time revisit the classic aspect of it. And whether they succeed remains to be seen, you know, every time you do that kind of a product. So, again, as Herb mentioned, while we are doing reproductions in the current frame of mind and picking games that were not only... this is one of the issues that we have. We know there's a lot of great games out there, but likewise, in the manufacturing quantities, there's also a lot of great games out there that were made in large quantities and haven't diminished in quantities, and the collector can get a quality version of that product. He can pay somebody to refurbish it, and when we're looking at the price point of selling a game and what a refurbished game might sell for, while we can offer brand spanking new, nothing to go wrong with it, there may be a big difference in pricing to where it's like, yeah, but I can get a really nice one for only blah, blah, blah. So we have to weigh that, too. And King of Diamonds, in relatively speaking, is a low production game. And when you add the extra 40-plus years between the day it was made and now that we're trying to sell one, a lot less of them have survived. And what really motivated this whole idea in Herb's head is he's been doing this for many, many, many years. And when he started, it was very easy for him to get pristine examples, chrome them, you know, make them even prettier, and then sell them and make a very happy customer. And the customers see that customer's game and call him up and say, "I want one too." And it became harder and harder for him to find quality product to restore. And it became more and more expensive for him in labor to produce the same quality of restoration for his customers, which is why he hounded us. It's like, okay, I make the back glass, I make the Mylar, why can't I make a game? So that's where I stepped in, and with the help of a couple other people, we hopefully have done it justice. Yes, in front of you.
If software updates are needed after you've already distributed, you know, let's say you find a glitch or something 6 months down the road after you distributed, how are software updates put in?
Well, old school in this case, because there's patents in place that protect doing it in other ways. So in this case, a software update will be done by replacing a chip. So in this case, it may be necessary to replace two chips because it's a master-slave processor system, and one software change in one processor may require some adjustment in the second one. Yes?
What are the features that you like in the King of Diamonds that made you pick that particular machine?
Animation. See, my feeling really is at this point, I've been selling pinballs for a long time, and I've been restoring them since the 70s. And the one thing I've noticed is people prefer animation in their game. And the problem is I think all the newer electronic games, there's no skill to it anymore. It's how fast I can get into multi-ball, and that's it. And realistically, there's quite a few more Gottliebs that I'd like. And one thing about Gottlieb, you got to hand it to them. If you were to have to sit down and pick, okay, how many games from Gottlieb were really good games that would make a good reproduction? Then you look at Bally, then you look at Williams, you realize with Gottlieb, as I read off, they were very creative in what they built. I think what's nice about this game is it's a card game, which is very popular right now, and we've had interest from the hotels in Las Vegas, we've had interest from the TV shows, and they love the idea. And one thing we are going to offer that most of the other companies own is we will make custom games. So if you might see Bellagio, King of Diamonds, you might see Monte Carlo, King of Diamonds, P. Cooley, King of Diamonds on the side.
I personally like that one.
Yeah.
A lot.
And having that, this is really our footprint, it's really not going to be too difficult to do other games. And they, when we wound up working our agreement with them, as long as they get their percentage of the sale, they're very happy with it. You know, the main
thing. In our relationship with them, obviously, it has to be discussed and approved.
But yeah.
Every step of the way now, we've gotten, you know, the proper approval from Bob Vesian and Gottlieb Development LLC.
Probably Bob likes Las Vegas, so I'm assuming there'll be some trips involved.
I'm sure he'd make it to where we had to do a few visits in order to iron out the details on that deal.
Yeah.
And they'd all be in Vegas.
It's nice. We're getting support from everybody from this, so it's turning out to be really a wonderful project. And I'll tell you, every time I play it, I love playing it more and more. But you should see the people when you play four people playing together on this game, the expression. And what really did it for me was a six-year-old kid playing it yesterday and him yelling at his father, "Dad, look, the reels are turning. The cards are going down." That's what you want to see, because that's the future pinball of those kids. Instead of them running over to a video game to put the money in, they'll run over to a pinball and play it. That's the key. And let's face it, you can't buy one of those, play it online or whatever. You have to put it in your house. And I think you're going to see that, especially with this game, it satisfies both the operators because it's very easy to service. You can get parts. All you have to do is make a call. And at this point, everybody that does parts sales wants to carry the game. And every part of that game you can get. So it's not a problem. So I – go ahead. I'm sorry.
How do you check scores after a game's over with a four-player game?
You use the flippers to recall it. So if
no, you know, it's funny. I think everybody, or at least the Gottlieb people, just absolutely love this game. Now, the only, you know, probably if there was any criticism, there's two criticisms I've got on the game. One is, why didn't we use the original cabinet? And that's actually, it is a Gottlieb cabinet, so we're keeping true to form to Gottlieb. But we have the room to expand that to, if, let's say, somewhere down the road, we, let's say, do an amusement theme. It'd be kind of cool if the roller coaster goes up and around the decorama and back. So it's nice. We have a lot of room to play with this. And we can do big flippers. We can do small flippers. We can do pretty much anything. How do I put this? The real pinball players love playing with the small flippers because that's a skill game. There's really not, oh God, I shouldn't even be saying this, but I don't think there's really that skill of a game using a big flipper. I think to show how good of a pinball player, you play with a smaller flipper.
People to play small flipper games, you know what I mean? You know, because they haven't made small flipper games since 71.
Mm-hmm.
Times, you know, anybody that's been playing games since then has been playing on 3-inch games. And then when they go backwards to 2-inch flipper games, it seems like it's this big mental block for a lot of people. I'm just wondering if you encountered any resistance or anything.
Not at all. I mean, Ronnie, that.
Well, again, Herb's the one that dictated from the beginning that we would be making this game, and there, due to its design, I wouldn't see it to be beneficial to the game to have 3-inch flippers on it. It would be the mechanical. Do we want to do 3-inch flippers? Absolutely.
We will.
Received enough resistance from the product yet? It's not really out there, so we really don't know. We'll get that fee if the operators choose to put this out in operation. We'll get that feedback from them, and they may say, "No, nobody will play it. It's only got 2-inch flippers on it." But again, the concept was created out of the idea of a retro pinball game, and that's one of the aspects that kind of helps.
Yeah, but if you go and talk to Tim Arnold, who's running the Pinball Hall of Fame in Vegas, he says that, you know, basically if he looks at the statistical numbers on what gets played, he's like, it's a two-way flipper game. Don't get played.
I fully understand that. Personally, I'm not a fan of playing two-inch flipper games either. I grew up with... They were at the end of their life when I started playing pinball, and I grew up playing three-inch.
That's why I just wondered if there was any, you know, thought process maybe...
Well, the original thought process was we're duplicating the original game. Right, the original game had two-inch flippers, and not to take too much creative license with that product, which obviously I've done a little bit with. But that was one thing we stuck with.
And we have had people mention, well, you have the square flippers, the small ones, not the round ones like the original one came with. So, you know, we're going to have a little bit of lessons with it. But, like, you know, one of Ronnie's favorite game is Eldorado, and I, you know, see that being done down the road. So, yeah, we'll have all different types of flippers. But I think a real 60s game has to have a 2-inch flipper on it.
So to get back to the original question about recalling score, once that's the fourth player... Basketball match. Still displaying that player's score and their status. They got one target in playing the game. Within 5 seconds, the computer automatically switches to player three, recalls third player's score, play field status, card status, match light. Within 5 seconds, recalls the next player. Again, recalls the final first player. And then after the 5 seconds from reviewing the total number of players that were played, it's going to recall the high score to date. If in that four-player game, one of those players had topped the high score to date, at the end of the ball of the last player, it would automatically recall the high score to date, displaying the player by flashing it along with high score to date, and then it's there. Now, after it's gotten to the point of where it's finally displayed the high score to date, the player can walk up, switch the light in here to pick player number four, and the game will recall that. The game does have a sleep mode. It stops playing with the targets after a two-minute period so that a kid wouldn't sit there and just continually exercise the game to death. So it will perpetually recall the score as the person brings it up, and it just recalls the score. So you can, you know, after you've had your greatest game ever and you want to run back to the bar and go bring your buddies over and show them, you just have to use the flippers to direct it, the computer, to which player you want to show and show how embarrassing it scored you then.
Any other questions? Okay.
How are they going to know how to do the high score thing?
I don't
know. How to display the high scores to our friends? Is there instructions to say that?
Well, again, trying to keep to the look, but then utilize areas where we can provide additional instructions. The artwork that used to just say flipper buttons on side of cabinet, which is kind of a no-brainer in this day. Actually, we need a sticker that says start button on front of cabinet. But we added the at end of game, use flipper buttons to recall final scores. So, and at that time when we printed the sticker, high score to date wasn't implemented in the game. But now, and that is a user option or an operator option, so I wouldn't dictate it in a permanent sticker, but assume that, you know, it's got... Pinball's about learning, at least it was with me. You know, it's not like you don't take the class in school, you don't have an instructor, you've got the machine in front of you, you drop a coin in.
It's part of the fun.
Yeah, you're teaching yourself something you didn't know. Or a buddy's showing you, but if you do this, you know, and so it's a cool learning experience, and in this case, we're going to hope that that also helps guide the player to learn a little more about the game. Does it stop them from understanding what they did? Does it change what actually occurred? No. I mean, if they got a high score to date, the game's going to go knock, knock, knock and give them three replays. Whether they understand what a knocker is, whether they understand what a replay unit is and a start button, that remains to be seen. And without voice calls or a dot matrix display, you know, there's only so much you can convey.
Yeah.
So hopefully they understand what transpired and they're going to benefit by it, and in time they'll learn extra things about it.
And by the way, you have a problem, you'll call the number, there will be Ronnie on the phone to answer it for you.
I'll be busy programming the next game.
No, the main idea is that we're going to be there for everybody. We're basically collectors that got into the industry, and we will get feedback from, you know, people... basically the collectors, and I've had a lot of collectors that want to work with us on some of the projects. So, you know, we're going to probably sit down with the partners and everybody else and kind of go from there, because we've talked to a lot of people here this weekend and everybody's more than interested to get involved. And I say, why not? I mean, this is coming from all of us if you really think of it. Go ahead.
Have you considered Major Estes, one of the retro games, since it's a real low production but a really fun player?
I haven't, but if there's one out there, I'll go play it.
Yeah, you have to understand, a lot of us are here from California. There's not a lot of Gottliebs back out here. I mean,
both of us grew up in the Southern California area, and for the better part of our childhood, pinball was illegal. It was legalized in 73, 74, and right at that time is when I started playing pinball, and that's when they started showing up everywhere in department stores and in pool halls and bowling alleys. And so my expertise of play goes from that period, you know, to today. And it's these shows and other collectors that, you know, have you ever seen this game? Have you ever played it? You got to come over here and look at it.
Yeah, the first
every day I learn about some new feature, some new rule set. It's great, you know, that there's so many different aspects about pinball over these years. And, I've been learning both as an outsider and as an insider, you can't please everybody all the time. And hopefully we'll be around long enough making product to where we can please everybody at some point in time. But we have to have a target audience, pick something that we think will be universally accepted, and explore that. And then when we're ready to do second title, hopefully there'll be just as much interest in it, and we'll do that. And I like to create, and so hopefully I'll get the opportunity to do something original. And we're talking to people in the pinball business that are now unemployed that would love to get on board and do something, and we'd like to talk to them and explore the possibilities there. But, you know, we're still at the startup point, and we hope we have a very bright future ahead of us, and we're doing our best to keep pinball alive for everybody concerned, because, it's been a part of my life since I was about 11 years old, and it's been the center of my life for many, many years through my childhood and teen years, so it's in my blood, and I don't know doing anything else. Pinball is what I love doing, and hope to be doing it for a long time.
Yeah.
I think we've used our time.
Yeah.
Do you have any closing comments?
No, it's just this, you know, you guys have any suggestions, come grab us. I mean, we're pretty fine with that. We love starting more fights anyway between the four partners, so that's no problem. But thank you for coming. We appreciate it.